Greetings and welcome to episode 6 of Dragons and Starships. I'm your guest host CJ, your hobbit with bare feet and hairy palms.
Oh, hairy palms. So, I'm your other guest host, Angus Day. I'm the sci-fi, space opera, military sci-fi, nerdo, chemist, writer. Yeah, okay.
That's quite a mouthful.
Yep, it's a couple mouthfuls. Welcome.
Well, what have we got going on in the news these days?
Well, so I think the first item up on this list is yours, so why don't you head off with Channing there, CJ?
Yes. This is a little bit old news, actually, but I'd say within the past week or so, Channing Tatum is going to play Gambit in the next upcoming X-Men rendition. And I got to say, I'm not bashing Channing Tatum as an actor. You know, I think he's fine, but not as Gambit. I'm sorry. I just, poor choice, and of course it's to draw in the interest to watch the movie from the non-comic book people. And I really wish Hollywood would stop doing that and just focus on making a good storyline, good comic, something that's already established, and put good people into the part.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but I was pretty all right with Wolverine Origins guy who played Remy LeBeau Gambit.
Yeah, he did a fantastic job.
I'm not even sure why he's not even being... I mean, you would think he did well enough that they could have shoehorned him into this continuing franchise, but maybe he was already booked.
That's always a possibility. If he had other things going on and he couldn't do it, that's understandable. But when it comes down right to the brass tacks here, again, Hollywood has proven themselves on over again where they are only concerned about the blockbuster, getting the big names, and putting them into a movie to draw the audience. And with the same thing happened with previous comic book movies. They should have done, or should do, and you'd think they'd learn their lesson from this, like they did with the original Superman movie when they put Christopher Reeves in there. Christopher Reeves was a relative unknown at that point, and he pulled it off.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they're still so focused on big names to guarantee that blockbuster and income, as opposed to just doing right by the fans, doing right by the movie, and doing right by the story.
Well, I think they kind of did a little better in the last rendition of Superman, which is Man of Steel, with Henry Cavill. I don't think he had been in much, just see on Game of Thrones, or he was on one of those series, but I don't think he had been in much in the way of films.
No, he was also a relative unknown, and he did do a good job.
And they pulled the big names for the supporting cast members, you know, like Lawrence Fishburne in charge of the Daily Globe. And then you have Kevin Costner, you know, for his, let me run into the tornado moment. You know, and those were the big names as supporting actors, but then and Russell Crowe as his father. But as this Channing Tatum business, I've seen him in a bunch of stuff, and usually in the fun type movies, he's all right. But in the serious ones, they usually dog out with him in them.
I don't consider him a Marvel comic action figure hero type. Not even for Gambit. It doesn't fit. Unless they're planning to make him a more comedic type role or character for the movie, but I don't see it. He doesn't fit.
Right. I'm in agreement with you. I'll see it just to see how it goes off. But I had, up until this announcement got made, I had heard a lot of the vine shaking was that Channing Tatum was going to be replacing Wolverine. That would have been such a shot in the gonads. I mean, it would have killed the series, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt that if they put him in replacement of Hugh Jackman, that you know, you're always going to get people to watch it regardless. And especially if there's Channing Tatum fans out there, you're always going to get those people that will watch regardless. But Hugh Jackman has proved himself to be Wolverine. And to switch it like that with this person, no. There's no way. I don't even think he could pull that off either. So even less than Gambit, for that matter.
Okay. Well, we're in agreement on that. We'll see what happens, eh?
Exactly. The Flash TV series.
Okay. So for those of you out there that were actively watching television series back in the 80s, I think, maybe the early 90s.
I believe it was in the early 90s.
Yeah, they made an attempt at a Flash TV series back then. I don't even think it went a full season. They are going at it again. And this time the CW is going in after it, and the creators of Arrow are putting it together. And I saw the trailer during the season 2 finale of Arrow, and I also went online and watched the 5-minute trailer that they've put up, and they're not holding back on development of this. They're going to make a pretty awesome show, I think.
Yeah, I remember the Flash series from the 1990s, and to be honest with you, considering the time period and the somewhat attempts to make comic character TV series were all but dismal for the most part. Although I did like the Flash series from the 90s. I was a little surprised it didn't go for a longer period of time. It did go just one season. I thought they actually did a very good job on it. The effects were pretty good. The stories were pretty good. And then, of course, they had Mark Hamill play the villain off and on. Yeah, I mean, I thought they actually did pretty good. There were some things they could have changed, but for the most part, they did a good job.
Yeah, I liked the show when it was on. Don't remember who played Barry Allen in that right off. Considering the bandwidth on my computer, I'm kind of afraid to go check it out at the moment here. But
that was John Wesley Shipp. He was actually I believe he started off in TV daytime soap operas.
Well, that figures. So Stephen Amell from Arrow will be in this series for one episode anyway. It looks like there's going to be a little bit of crossover from Arrow. And then they may actually build up to do something that's, what is it, Justice League that's DC comic?
Yes.
So, yeah, it looks like they're trying to build some inertia to get crossovers going and get a bunch of series besides Arrow and then, you know, get Arrow and The Flash up and doing well, and then they'll actually start churning out some movies. Go, you know. I think the public's ready for that in their diet. They're kind of, I think the Star Trek reboot movies are pretty good, and there's some unsanctioned but Star Trek Renegade series that are internet only that you can watch. But it's been a very long time since there's been a franchise that has stretched across TV books, comic books, and movies all at one time.
I agree that they are going that direction with The Flash, Arrow, and many of these other characters that are coming out. They do have full intention of doing Wonder Woman as well. At some point,
everyone wants to do Wonder Woman.
Yeah, well, she might be a little too energetic for me.
There's that awkward moment.
But, you know, it was interesting when I was watching and reading some information about The Flash. At first, my impression, especially with how young the guy is who's playing The Flash in this TV series, my first impression was they were going to switch it up, and instead of doing Barry Allen, they were going to do Wally West.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one that was going to be The Flash, because Wally West was the next Flash. And so, you know, I feel that they could have picked somebody older once again, Hollywood. Let's lean towards getting the younger crowd to watch the TV series. And I don't really feel it's necessary. They've they've got enough of a following, enough of an interest, even from people that aren't diehard comic book fans, you know, people that are interested in watching these kind of movies. I just don't see why they feel the need to do that.
I kind of do, but I see it as the, well, and I hate to say this, but there's a tendency towards less and less attention span, and there's a certain segment that can't even sit still long enough to read a comic book. So you throw a TV series at them because that's the next step in that direction, and that's meant to pull in, like you said before on the Channing Tatum, and, you know, it's getting another segment of the viewing public throwing their dollars at it somehow, because they'll see advertisements and go out and salivate and buy those products.
Yeah, no, that's true. Again, it comes down to the bottom dollar. You know, what's going to give us give them the biggest bang for their buck and give them the most bucks, and this is the direction they go. So as long as it's well done, and they have a good storyline, and don't make the character cheesy and too full of, you know, typical teen angst or whatever that they seem to pump in there so everybody can quote unquote relate, I guess. I don't know. It's just, I that's all I'm really concerned about. I've seen plenty of people who I thought, really, they're playing that part? I mean, a perfect example is for Iron Man. Oh, crap. What's his name?
Robert Downey Jr.
Thank you. I just went blank. I couldn't picture Robert Downey Jr. playing Tony Stark in Iron Man. Even though he is a good actor, it just for some reason didn't fit. But you know what? He pulled it off. So I'm willing to give this kid a chance as long as he does a good job, as long as the storyline is well done. They could do with a little bit different costume. it almost looks like they took a really old version of the costume and used that instead. And maybe I'm just used to seeing these costumes that are a little bit more filled out, because it almost looks like he's wearing something that's just too big for him.
Yeah, it kind of looks that way. I'm sure that they'll figure out some way to explain it. Like he's constantly losing so many calories that he keeps shrinking at it or something.
That's very possible.
That was one of the things I remember from the old television series that just stuck with me, was when the guy, you said Wesley Shipman?
John Wesley Shipp.
He gets back from, I don't know, doing whatever, testing or what, and he's using his super flash speed to, like, chow through about 40 boxes of cornflakes.
Yeah.
Because he's burned all that off. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, his metabolism's gone through the roof, so he's chowing down on whole pieces of entire chickens, and so, yeah. But I like the twist on that. I believe that was actually a plot line, or not so much a plot line, but a character aspect that they took from Wally West from the comics.
Okay.
Where his metabolism was so high he had to eat much more to compensate for it.
It kind of makes sense, though.
It does. It really does. I mean, I thought they did, like I said, a really good job with it. They had some really good stories. John Wesley Shipp did a great job as Flash, in my opinion. And I was sad to see it go off the air so soon.
Yeah. We all cry when those things happen.
Yeah. Over the corner and cry.
Yeah. Interstellar.
Yes, Interstellar. I just recently found out about this, and for good reason. They have purposely kept this one under wraps and mysterious. I don't know, instead of pumping it up like they normally do, they took this movie and decided to be very quiet about it and just now release the information for it. Now, that could be both good or bad. It could be a fantastic blockbuster. It could turn out to be an absolute piece of cheese. So, but it does have a good cast. It's Matthew McConaughey, Anne Hathaway, William Devane, and many others that are in this movie. And it looks, I mean, like I said, it's star-studded, and it's an interesting story. I saw the trailer for it. Basically, Earth has had it. Earth is falling apart. It's eventually going to choke out everybody unless they find an alternative. And apparently there's this wormhole that they discovered nearby and have decided to take advantage of it to go and search for a new Earth and take everybody off dying Earth and move them to this new world. And that's about the extent of what I know about this movie. It looks like it's very more of a drama as opposed to, I mean, obviously science fiction, but it's more, it doesn't look action-packed.
Yeah.
It's more about the storyline and the people interacting and, of course, taking off into space through the wormhole to go find this new world.
Well, I imagine there's going to be some action because you can see who wrote it and who's directing it, and that's Christopher Nolan, and Jonathan and Christopher Nolan were the writers.
Mm-hmm.
So fresh off of the Batman trilogy, you know, we're going to have, and you hit the top on these, but let me list some more armament they've got here. Topher Grace, yeah, that 70s show. All right. Casey Affleck, Michael Caine,
uh-huh.
Ellen Burstyn, John Lithgow. Yeah, they've invested. So I think they're going to do something here.
I'm really interested in watching this movie to see how it plays out. It's hard to tell, again, from the trailer. They really only focus a little bit on the actually going into space part. And really, the trailer is more about the interaction between Matthew McConaughey and his daughter. And I, just because of the nature of the film, I'm really looking forward to seeing this movie.
I agree. I'm going to be interested to go see that one, too. And I, considering who's made it and who's in it and what it's involving, I think that's going to have some big screen money for me. I won't wait for Redbox. I'll just go see it.
Well, it's just like Godzilla. We want to go see that at the theaters as opposed to, you know, waiting till it comes out. Because, you know, it's one of those things that you've got to see in a theater. So.
Speaking of which, I've almost missed my opportunity to go see Winter Soldier. I'll have to figure out a way to work that one in.
There's too many things lining up. I mean, here we've got all the summer blockbusters coming in now, and yeah, there's quite a list backing up. And so it's a decision between, you know, getting repairs in the house done and, you know.
Yeah.
All the typical stuff you have to do, or go see movies.
Yeah, I've got those kind of decisions to make, too. It's either go see movies, or what are we not going to do on our vacation in Maine the end of June. So,
exactly.
All right. So you have the...
I did want to throw another one in there.
Okay.
I recently checked on the status of this because I was kind of curious. Being a gamer, I've played World of Warcraft, and for many years now they've talked about making a World of Warcraft movie. And I know part of it was the reason that they haven't done it to this point is this is something they would have to make with a lot of special effects and a lot of CGI because of the creatures. I don't know how many out there in the audience have played World of Warcraft or know about it, but there are a lot of aspects of the game that would be impossible, in my opinion, to actually recreate using somebody in a suit. Even with really good makeup, some of the characters and beings in this world would be difficult to do without doing CGI. And if they were to do a good job and follow along the lines of some of the newer CGI methods like Avatar or other similar movies or even TV series for that matter, and they have a good storyline, it should turn out really well. But unfortunately, Hollywood has a really bad track record of turning games into movies. Look at Doom, for instance. Oh. I don't know if you ever saw Doom. Did you ever see Doom?
Doom. D-O-O-M?
Yeah, Doom.
I saw the movie with The Rock and Carl Urban.
Yes.
And, whenever the alien infection got a hold of them, they just went into full-on gamer mode, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. Not only did they basically take a right turn away from the actual plot line and that the game follows, they tried to incorporate that that first-person shooter type look and feel to it, which that's fine. That's fine. I can understand that, and of course gamers would get a kick out of that, but the whole storyline suffered because they didn't follow the original story and they tried to focus more on The Rock being the hero.
Yeah. He went a little psycho in that one. That's not the normal character mode for him, but...
No. So I'm really hoping that, especially since it's been a while since we've really had a game-to-movie release for some time, and we have a lot of these comic book movies that are done pretty well, that they'll take this to heart and they'll do a good job with it. Because the game itself has pretty much gone south. They've lost a lot of subscriptions. They've lost a lot of players, people who are dissatisfied with the game because of lack of, for better term, lack of interest in creating a quality game and a playable game for that matter. So I think what's happening is World of Warcraft as a game is going down. Maybe the World of Warcraft movie, if done well enough, will regenerate that interest in the game itself.
So I'm looking at the IMDb for this thing, CJ, and the thing that's got a hold of me is the lead guy. So the lead guy plays Ragnar Lothbrok on the Vikings, which is nuts. I mean, have you seen any episodes of that?
No, I have not.
I've been able to just barely look up the HistoryChannel.com and see some, but they keep hitting me with, this thing wants to crash again. Travis Fimmel. They keep hitting me with commercials every 2 to 3 minutes when you try and watch it on the laptop there. This guy is the head guy. He's just bloodthirsty, straight on action. It's pretty awesome. Now, if you go back to the actual IMDb for the Warcraft movie, I don't know Paul Patton. Ben Foster, I've seen in a bunch of stuff. I think I've seen Dominic Cooper and stuff. And
then, yeah, Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Kaczynski. It's like, yep. They've got some big names lined up for this.
Daniel Wu's in it.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what he's been in.
He's been in a lot of things, action movies, and I'm looking up his...
Yeah, me
his,
too.
Europa
Report, he was in that. I reported on that in an earlier episode of Dragons and Starships.
Mm-hmm.
Protégé, the bank.
So they look like they've got a pretty good lineup. It's just hard to... I mean, they don't have a list of what parts they're playing on here, though.
Yeah, except for Ryan Robbins, who's playing Karos, apparently.
I'm trying to picture the Karos character. It sounds familiar, but trying to picture the Karos character in the actual game, and I'm drawing a blank.
Well, you would have a better chance of it than I would.
Well, Travis Fimmel, he might be playing... Just based on his looks and his track record, he might be playing King Varian Wern, which is the main boss king of the Alliance in World of Warcraft. That's possible. That's a possibility right there. As to who would be playing the other parts, I couldn't even hazard a guess.
Well, I'm sure when it comes out, I'll be hearing all about it, because my son plays World of Warcraft, and... Yeah, there's times when we have disconnect in conversation because I have no idea about raids or collecting gear or...
My wife's the same way. I'll start talking about it and she'll be just, you know, that whole deer in the headlights look, like, what?
Yeah, it's either the deer in the headlights look or you have something growing out of your forehead look.
Exactly. Or either that or they're like, why are you wasting time on this game?
There you go.
Okay, now it's time for our question of the week. Actually, questions of the week. We got a couple of them here. We're kind of getting a little esoteric here, but I've always been curious to what people think about mythological beings. Do you believe that dragons were or are real? Or do you believe that there's any other fantasy creatures that are real or were real at one time? Now, my immediate answer for dragons would be a resounding yes. And a lot of people basically will just go, okay, well, what have you been smoking this week? And I'd be happy to tell them, but it's not one of those things that I look at as being even remotely silly or even anything that to me would be considered crazy. Because to me, even if they don't exist today, at least not as we know it, there was a time that they did exist. I have no doubt in my mind or heart about that whatsoever. The same way with fairies, and fairies do still exist. They did exist. They still exist. There are a lot of, to me, mythological creatures are so inherent in our culture, especially our past culture, and there's so much detail about them, so much interaction. How could they not be?
I agree. You're kind of preaching to the choir on this one, CJ, but here's a different viewpoint on that. We base a lot of our, let's say, as a culture, our present-day opinion of what existed and what didn't exist on, you know, anthropological records and, you know, dinosaur bones. Somebody's an expert somewhere. They reassembled them in this fashion, or they found them, you know, buried in a place that preserved them. We cannot disprove that dragons existed because, quite frankly, if animals inhabited, like, let's say they were flying dragons and we had a meteor impact that threw up all this dust and caused the iridium line.
Mm-hmm.
That we say, okay, this is where the impact happened, and then after that, we start to find fossil record that doesn't show that there's dragons. But if there were actually flying dragons and somehow the meteor impact caused a different mode of demise for them, there's no guarantee that they would be in the fossil record.
That's right. And what I've discovered is, first of all, I don't think people truly understand how large this world is. There are areas that humans have not even begun to go through. I mean, like either in research or in exploration.
Yeah, bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, let alone dig into the ground and find what's under there. They just recently found dinosaur bones and have pretty much said that this is the largest dinosaur ever in existence, even bigger than T-Rex or any other dinosaur. They said this was not one of a kind, but a dinosaur that they've never seen before.
That's the one down in Argentina.
That's correct. Yeah, the one they found in South America there. And yeah, it's huge. It's the biggest one they've found. It's basically a brand new dinosaur for all intents and purposes. So what's to say that just because we haven't found it yet, or maybe we found things that we didn't know where it belonged,
yeah,
so we just threw it into a generic dinosaur pile. So in my opinion, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. At some point they will find something that will point to that. So, or like you said, it could be something else that decimated the actual population of dragons at some point.
Well, let's say that they were flying, and even if they were fire-breathing, they may have crashed into the ocean, you know, trying to get away from whatever meteor or radiation or whatever was afflicting them. Or they may have just, you know, because of the fact that they lit off the ground when the impact happened.
Exactly.
Something else caused them, and maybe they all immolated. And then there wouldn't be anything left, depending on, you know, if we're talking about meteor or asteroidal impact, like Chicxulub, you've got nuclear detonation-type forces, you know. And we know from the tests in the 50s and from Hiroshima and Nagasaki that if you're in a certain place when a nuclear bomb goes off, there's nothing left of you but a shadow imprinted in a brick.
Exactly.
So, yeah, the whole business about, oh, they didn't exist because they're not in the fossil record is a load of crap. There's also the fact that we have cross-cultural conformation. So we have dragons of the West that are in Celtic mythos, they're in Norse mythos, they're in, to some extent, I believe, African and
yes.
and Middle Eastern mythos.
And then Mayan.
Yeah. And then you have Oriental dragons, which, you know,
which is huge. Yeah. Absolutely huge. It's they're to this day they still make dragon figures and buildings with laced with dragons, and it's part of their culture. And the only reason we don't see it that often in Western culture is because the Christians came along and decided dragons were bad, they were evil, and if you were to, it became more of a evil being as opposed to something that actually was part of the culture and existed.
Yeah, thank you, St. Pat my ass. Yeah, it's the same thing with, like, one of the creatures that was in my ancestry, my heraldry, which is a griffin, where I think it actually, it's one of those things that was recorded enough that it may have actually existed. It may have been a mutant, you know, mutation from a form of lion, or it may have been a totally, it may have died off because it wasn't able to adapt. You know what I mean?
So. You said it was a mutant. You mean it was one of the first X-Men?
Yeah, or X-Things.
X-Things. Well, that's, once again, you see so many things that in culture, different cultures around the world where there's a combination of animals together. Why not?
Well, and let's bring science back into it, too. So one of the fantasy creatures that you brought up were the Fae or the Fairies.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes in mythos, when we discuss the Fae or the Fairies are going to visit them, we're stepping into another realm, another dimension. When you start to examine what our senses, you and I, what current human senses are capable of, and you look at the visible light spectrum, that is a very narrow realm of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
If they exist, they may exist and vibrate in other spectrum outside of visible light, and they may have the ability to come and go, not so much from place to place, but from vibrations, you know. So there's no guarantees that these don't exist. There's just a bunch of people out there that want to move on and say, oh, grow up, you can't believe this
yeah.
anymore. It's like, and I return with, bite me.
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much my response too. You know, you don't know until you can come to me and show me physical proof of that they don't exist. Just like when they say, "Oh, well, can you show me proof they do exist?" Well, no, of course I can't, because I don't have one sitting in front of me to give to you, or any bones or anything else. That's it works both ways. So, in my opinion, and the way I feel, how strongly, and obviously you as well, I don't need the proof.
Right.
So.
Well, the proof is in the, for me, is in the cross-cultural belief and the lack of fossil record, you know, due to the fact that we haven't been every square inch on this planet. That, and it's quite possible the fossil record doesn't have everything.
Exactly.
So let me pull this chart up here. Visible light, you know, 400 to... let's say 650 nanometers, and then you have ultraviolet below 400, you have near infrared between 700 and 900, you have far infrared 900 to 1200, you know, and that's not even covering microwave and, you know, when you really start getting nuts. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that say things, and they come off sounding all authoritative. They try and take away our mythology and the things that make us, have made us who we are. And I tell them, I would tell them if they would actually keep listening, is that I am richer for believing in these things, and I don't need to spend my life chasing them down. because
exactly.
Someday I may get lucky and they may appear to me.
I completely agree. I really feel strongly that there's, and you know, again, it's kind of going in esoteric direction, but that's what faith is all about. You know, faith is, it's in your heart, you know it, you believe it, you feel it. You don't need the proof. You don't need to go trying to prove it to yourself or to anybody else. You just know.
Amen, your geekiness. All right, so have we beat that one to death?
I think we've beaten that unicorn to death, yep.
All right, I threw the next one in here because I'm kind of in a drought. My predilection for wanting to watch science fiction television usually hinges on, you know, space opera, which sometimes it's been cheesily done in the past, and that's probably why there's some resistance to keeping it going. But I would like to see space opera brought back into future science fiction film and television. There is Star Trek out there, and I think Star Trek has been beat to death with a thorny stick. There's a series of books, and I just listened to an audible version of one of Ben Bova's. He wrote the Tour of the Solar System series of books, and he also wrote a small series that hinged upon settling the moon and the rock rats, which hinged around miners inhabiting the belt and forming a culture on the frontier out there where they weren't so much like previous pioneers who barely had a grade school education and went plowing into the West and starting wars with the Native Americans. These are like made up of chemists and engineers and people that have had it with being oppressed on Earth and want to get out into space where they can actually stake a claim and make something of themselves and their families. I think we're ready for something like that. What do you think, CJ?
I absolutely agree. And I think the last space opera type show series that I saw that was, of course, fantastic was Battlestar Galactica. And it's been, 5 years since the series ended?
Yeah, since the newest edition of it. I think Blood and Chrome are they still showing that?
I think they're still going, if I remember correctly. I haven't checked them actually in a little while, so I'm not sure if that's still running. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And my wife and I have talked about that before, where, you know, we need a good series to watch. And right now, of course, we're watching Game of Thrones, but we know how that series works. They show about 6 episodes, and then it's done for the season. And
yeah,
a year later,
and I are trying to figure out how to view that instead of watching it on a laptop. We're trying to figure out how to get it streamed onto our television set so we can both watch it at the same time.
Yeah, so what I would like to see is a series go back to the way it used to be and show the series in a complete season instead of, you know, breaking it up into 6 or 7 episodes and then you don't see anything for another year.
Well, they do that with Sherlock Holmes, too.
Cumberbatch
makes.
It's the trend, so unfortunately I don't see it anytime soon. But I noticed, and it was funny because when we talked about Interstellar earlier, I had an idea for a book series that I was going to start dabbling into science fiction again, because it's been a while since I've done anything science fiction-y. Not that I don't have any other books to do, but I always get these ideas. And one of them was, and Interstellar touched on it a little bit, was people that are traveling to other locations because, you know, essentially Earth has gotten too overpopulated and there's a number of problems. So, you know, go out and search among the stars. And I was watching also a show when they were talking about different types of engines to use and different methods of traveling to nearby stars. And one of them was using a method to travel like either with ion power or something similar where you're getting closer to the speed of light but not quite. So you're still taking years to get somewhere. And basically it's a ship that travels to different planets to see if they are able to colonize it. And it's kind of a Star Trek in a way just because you're going to different planets. But
kind of an arc ship?
Yeah, like an arc ship, exactly, where you're traveling. And that's the entire series. Yeah. They're traveling, going through space, and they can, you know, do like they normally do, focus on some of the drama within the core group of people that are living on this ship. And of course, the ship is big enough to house quite a few people, and it's a generation ship, so it won't make any difference how far you go. You're not intending to come back to Earth. You're intending to take this large number of people out into space, find another place to colonize, and start a new human colonization on a new planet somewhere.
Well, one of the things you brought up there on that ion propulsion drive is, or one of the things that's kind of novel about it as opposed to other methods, it's a method of constant acceleration. So you're having a reaction in the chamber, and the nozzle is directing out ions, and that's constantly happening. So when you reach a certain point, you have to calculate how to flip the ship and then use the ions, the same engine, to decelerate yourself into the target area where you're planning to orbit and visit. It kind of strikes me as interesting because I'm not sure what the limits are of storing reaction mass and how much reaction you would need to move. But since you're theoretically in a vacuum for most of the time, that technology probably has the most inertia right now for people that are projecting how you would build a starship. But one thing that's kind of inhibiting it is the concept of the solar shock wave.
Right.
So you get to the edge of the solar system, and you get beyond it, and the solar system's rotating or revolving, you know, rotating around other masses in the galaxy, the Milky Way. As it rotates, the sun, the solar wave is hitting the edge of our system. It's hitting dark matter out there on the edge somewhere and creating a force that pushes against what you try and send through it. And I wonder if we'll ever get to the point in my lifetime where we have enough information gathered about that Bose shock wave that'll allow us to plan beyond it, or if something neat will happen, like that interstellar idea where a wormhole gets discovered and we start figuring out how to get from A to B using mass transit instead of blowing up masses to transit.
Yeah, it's always an interesting problem. And one of the things I know that's an issue with propulsion is gravity. And of course, the dark matter, like you described. Anything that puts... I think people kind of get the idea that because space is a vacuum, you could just keep going forever and nothing will interrupt you. Well, there's particles of dark matter, or pockets of dark matter. There's black holes. There's lots of gravity from stars and planets. And so you really can't travel in a straight line. Even light that gets to Earth from the stars doesn't travel in a straight line.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that kills me about all these people that say we shouldn't fund meteor or asteroid detection. It's like they have no idea. If they could only imagine the solar system and all the bodies in it, and even out to the Kuiper Belt, as a giant-ass pool table. And a cue ball bouncing around, and you never know what ball's going to land where. It's like they would start to maybe lose some bladder control and start loosening up their wallet. But we've diverged off to something here.
That's easy to do. I mean, we could change the name of the show to Off on a Tangent and it fits.
Well, the space opera franchise that I was thinking about with this Ben Bova series would actually help to bring the public's focus back on near-term solar system kind of things that you can do. That guy wrote this stuff, in the 90s. He used to be an editor, I think, for one of the big sci-fi mags, either Asimov or Analog. He's always done a lot of research on everything that he's written, so he doesn't hand wave. I mean, he comes up with stuff in his books that makes sense. Mm-hmm. If only we could get our heads out of a certain sphincter and actually move the technology in that direction, we might find that it works. And matter of fact, a lot of the ideas he proposed in his books are out there under development. You just don't.
Yeah, they say there's no black holes on Earth. Well, all, most of these people have their head stuck in a black hole, so.
Yes, they do.
But, no, I agree. Once again, I've noticed that Hollywood has a tendency to avoid things and just try to come up with stuff on their own. It doesn't work so much.
Well, I noticed. And there's
there's plenty of good writers out there, plenty of good stories. Like, you know, a perfect example is Ben Bova. I mean, his books have been around forever and a day, and he's got a lot of really good stories out there. Why not take what is there, what's already established, and of course not put your own little, I should write it this way spin on it, and just put it out there. People will come. As they say, if you build it, they will come. Well, he's already built it. He's established it. It's set. Take what's there, build on it as you need, but don't take away the essence of it. And yeah, you've got movies and TV series for years, and then that's what I don't understand. There's so many good stories out there. Use them, take them, put them forward so that it becomes enjoyable and engaging.
Yeah, stop rebooting old stuff.
Oh, God, don't even get me started on the reboot stuff.
So on this space opera business, there was a space opera within the last 10 years, and again, it only lasted one season. It was called Defying Gravity. It had the guy who starred in Office Space as one of the astronauts, and they were going out on a spaceship because the space agency had inherited an artifact, I guess. I can't remember. There was some sort of intelligent presence that they housed on a spaceship, and the spaceship was going to do a tour of all the planets in the solar system.
Oh, okay.
And it fizzled. You know, they never even had a good finale episode in the stupid thing. I've got copies of it, you know, but at a certain point, you can tell where they just, okay, we really didn't know what we were doing here, and we have no plan and no way to sell it to a producer. And then it got yanked, you know. And it was made in Canada, but for some reason, someone only put one foot in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. There's been, unfortunately, some good series out there that got plug pulled on it for one reason or another. And, I actually think there's room for a little more. We can take the, once again, the more serious, if you will, future space opera type movie, TV series, and then even do one that's kind of got a comedy flair to it, like Galaxy Quest.
Oh, yeah.
Why couldn't you take Galaxy Quest and turn that into a series? Now, of course.
Well, how about Life on the International Space Station, where every other week they have to do some sort of commercial tag along where they're saying what toothpaste they use or what cereal they sent up on the dragons. Like, good Lord, you know, or what kind of ridiculous antics they're doing so they can get their ratings up and get more funding for the ISS, you know?
Yeah, we could do something that's kind of like along the lines of Scrubs.
Yeah, there you go.
But do you remember years ago there was a series that lasted, I think it was also like just one season, maybe two, I'll have to look it up, but it was called Quark.
Oh, yeah, Richard Benjamin.
Oh, yes, I think you and I are probably the only two that even remember that series. That was actually, I watched that religiously, and I even recorded on video, you know, VHS, some episodes, and it was cornball as hell, full of cheese, lots and lots of cheese in it, but it was pulled off very well. And they had some interesting characters, great actors, actors that went on to do many other things. And
well, that had a good launch because I believe it came out just after Mel Brooks had released Spaceballs.
It was actually right before that. It started in 70, yeah, it was around 77, 78. And shortly, I don't remember if it was after or during the Star Wars time, but obviously that was a huge factor in contributing to its interest. That TV series, in case anybody doesn't know what this is, it was a series made back in the late 70s with Richard Benjamin. It's about a a commander who Richard Benjamin plays, Commander Quark, and he's in charge of basically a garbage scow, going through space and picking up everybody's garbage. So, and they had a lot of different characters that were part alien or somehow mutants or anything in the realm of science fiction that made them different. And they had, just different storylines that followed, you know, kind of typical space storylines. And it was very well done. It's just too bad that it was one of those series that didn't last that long. And then another comedy TV series, which I wish had continued, was actually a CGI, somewhat CGI, loosely, I guess, a 3D type series, was Tripping the Rift. Did you ever see that?
Oh, yeah. That was on the Sci-Fi channel, I believe.
Yeah, well, as much as they could show of it, it was pretty adult.
Yeah. So. Wasn't that where I first heard the radio announcer announcing some race, and his name was Harry Balsacks?
Something like yeah. that, yeah. Yeah, and then, of course, the main commander of the ship was named Chode, so, and the love of his life was basically a mechanical prostitute. And she was a android. And, yeah, she was rather well endowed as well, and with whatever silicone they built her out of. So it was a very adult show. I would love to see more shows like that and one good space opera, regular dramatic space opera, put up again. We're definitely severely lacking in that department.
Well, definitely, if they're going to do it, I would rather it got onto a network that you don't have to be indentured to the cable company to watch. I mean,
exactly.
This is ridiculous. I liked what they used to do with the Sci-Fi Channel when it was still not so corporate, but
yeah.
Now it's horrible, and I will not go back to Comcast and say, yeah, I want to pay $180 so that I can see the Sci-Fi Channel, because you can't get just the Sci-Fi Channel. You have to get a bazillion other channels that you don't care about.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we're going to be changing that up here pretty soon. And hopefully the regular network will get the huevos, if you will, to buck up and go ahead and create a really good quality show like Battlestar Galactica or something similar.
Sí, señor. Huevos full. Huevos grande.
And now that brings us to the movie of the week.
It's supposed to be Silent Running, dude. What were you thinking?
Silent Running? Oh, I do apologize.
That's cool. So this one's from back in 72, and it stars Bruce Dern. I can give you a quick synopsis, tell you that it's really, really a fun movie to watch, and it hasn't dated too much, except the, I think, American Airlines logo is on the side of these spaceships. I think they were a much bigger player back in the day. But these spaceships, there's three of them that are holding orbit, I guess, out beyond the asteroid belt. And they have bubbles in the front that house all of the last remaining of Earth's ecosystems. You have bubbles for desert, tropical, deciduous, alpine, whatever. There's three of them, and they're contracted by the government of Earth at this time, since they've all decided to agree on something for a change, to keep these for posterity. Well, something happens, and the contract goes south. Bruce Dern plays, let's call him a 22nd century hippie. He really actually cares about all the animals and plants that are on this thing. And the other people, like, we could view them as Generation WTF. They no longer care. They just want to run their you know, nuclear-powered buggies around and have demolition derbies and tear up the eco-structures and anything. So he really doesn't get along with them. He kind of hates them, and they hate him back. Well, they get the order, because the contract goes away, to jettison the domes and destruct them. Well, two of the ships, except for Bruce Dern's, do exactly that. Bruce Dern goes all, let's just say that he turns traitor to the crew But his loyalty is with the animals and the habitats, and he does away with the crew. And then he takes the ship down into the rings of Saturn, which causes a lot of damage. And the only thing to help him out is there are three robots, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And they've become, you know, personalities. So I'm not going to tell how the thing ends, but it's a pretty good movie. I liked it a lot. And it has stood the test of time. It's one of those things that really they threw money in and made well. Director was Douglas Trumbull. Writers were Derek Washburn, Michael Cimino, and Stephen Bocco. Bruce Stern and Cliff Potts are the last two humans on the Valley Forge. Then there's only Bruce Stern. You can fill in your imagination with what happens there. Now, I'm not going to say any more about it. I want everyone who hears this to actually look this up and you know, spend 89 minutes and watch it, because it won't be time you regret. It'll be a good movie.
I saw this movie in the theaters, and I absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it. To me, it's on the same level as 2001 A Space Odyssey, except it moves along faster, and it has a little more interaction going on, a little more action. I won't give away the ending, even though it was kind of funny because there was a girl crying in the audience at the end of the movie. I mean, bawling her eyes out, gnashing of teeth, that kind of thing. But I highly recommend this movie. It is older. The special effects are actually very good for the time period. That was just a great storyline. Very original story. Very well done. Bruce Dern, I don't know, he kind of went south later in his years, but he's a good actor, though. He really is. I mean, he pulled it off, and you felt very much, very attached to the characters, even the little robots that were walking around, androids, drones, whatever they call them, that were maintaining the place. So they did a fantastic job. I would highly recommend you see it. Don't anticipate this as being a high-end action film. It's not. A lot of it's pretty evenly paced. It's a drama. It's pretty evenly paced, but they just the storyline, content, and the effects, everything played very well together. So, yes, please, if you don't have it, haven't seen it, look it up on Netflix, go buy the DVD, something. Book of the Week.
Book of the Week was Blood Reaction for me by D.L. Atha. D.L. Atha is an authoress in Arkansas, and she's a fully trained doctor and licensed doctor, I believe. This has got to be the best scientific vampire book I have ever read. The protagonist, this is an emergency room doctor who's taken up a house out in the middle of nowhere next to a national park. She likes to horseback ride. She's a single mother. And she ends up attacked by a vampire. And as the week progresses and stretches out, she details the reactions that are occurring in her body as she changes. The book is cool. So by the time the end, you can see the beginning of a series going on where, you know, da-da-da, Dr. Vampire, you know, goes off to do good, and we'll see. But the first book, I don't know how the rest of it will play out if she writes sequels, but the first book was well done. The editing's awesome. And that's all I got to say on that.
Well, very cool. Sounds good. I always appreciate whenever, whether it's in a book, movie, anything, when they're talking about vampires or werewolves, when they're talking about it from a scientific aspect, when they're talking, and not so much obviously a true to life, but the way they explain it, the way they describe it, the way they even in again movies or TV, if they show how the blood is reacting, and it just gives it that sense of realism, more of a, instead of just boom they change, there's no explanation or anything, it's just they change. You don't see the subtle changes, you don't see the things going on underneath. And so I could see where that would be a lot of fun to, and very, very interesting read.
One of the cool things about this is the vampire that turns her is he was turned in the 1800s, and for some reason, you know, he never bothered to educate himself because the guy who turned him disappeared on him. So he has no idea, you know, exactly how the process is occurring in her. He only knows how it occurred in himself. So he has no idea that she's changing until it's, well, a surprise.
Interesting.
So, and that's, I'm giving that a thumbs up. So anyone out there, D.L. Atha, Blood Reaction. And I think we're moving on to movie B-movie madness or blindness. Madness and blindness. Maybe deafness.
Well, B-movie madness, and then you're blind after that.
You
so
wish you were.
You wish you were. What has been seen cannot be unseen.
Yes.
And now you have...
The Pod People. The MST3K's version, of course, because no one will survive it without them. Oh, my. Yeah. More like, you know, and hanging yourself during the filming or viewing. The Pod People is ridiculous. I'm glad there was some snark from MST, but even with them, I almost think that I wasted my time seeing this. Because, so, there's this group of poachers going into this national park and trying to poach eggs from birds of prey and all this. One of them has flowing black locks and a beard like a Norman invader. So the robot crow keeps screaming huzzah every time this guy strikes a pose. That was cool.
That sounds like me in the Renaissance fair.
Yeah. Then you have this pop group or pop singer with his backup singers in Nashville, and they keep doing takes, and you know, they've got the groupie thing going on with the station owner's daughter hanging out there wanting to do him. And they wrap up their recording for the week and go get in a camper with all these people wearing their disco clothes and head to the same national park. So anyway, this meteor crashes in while the poachers are doing their thing, and they have one dumb Canadian Sherpa who's hauling all their crap around. There's these other two guys that keep bullying him. He gets scared, runs off, jumps in a pickup truck, hauls butt. You know, he ends up finding the impact where this thing crashed into Earth, and now he sees all these eggs. And instead of whatever, he, you know, instead of collecting them, thinking that they could be valuable, he starts smashing them, and then gets taken out by the alien caregiver, which is this thing that looks like a giant Snuffleupagus. It's got an elephant head, it's got a fur body, and it wanders around. It's sort of a hybrid between cute and vomiting, disgusting. And, okay, let's see.
Okay.
Yeah, so back to the groupies. They get in a little snit because Johnny thinks so much of himself, causes a battle between his girlfriend backup singer and the recording studio's owner's daughter, yeah, whatever. So she has a run-in with Snuffleupagus, gets her butt killed. Then they all run to this cabin where there's a child. So all through this thing, the snarkiness of MST3K is saying, oh, and yet another movie. Every time they change scenes with no explanation, it seems like they've just started another movie. So, it was ridiculous. Anyway, the kid befriends a smaller version of Snuffleupagus, and then they have a brief interlude where small Snuffleupagus causes all these things, like things to float in the kid's room. He stands on the ceiling, gets all dancey and crap. It's kind of reminiscent of when the Martian stole Santa Claus. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I don't... Yeah.
I like Santa Claus versus the Martians, okay?
It's fine, all by itself. And that is one movie. You know, it's a little cheesy, But this thing had a scene of it thrown in there when everyone's supposed to be all serious, chasing down Snuffleupagus and, you know, whatever.
I knew that creature wasn't normal when he was on Sesame Street. There was something about him.
So my advice is, even with MST3K, please avoid this movie. It is not worth the time investment, even with MST3K snark to help you.
It was worth knowing not to see it, right?
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
I took the hit for all of you. You do not have to waste your time on this one.
Angus has suffered for our sins.
Yes. I'll get my retina transplant.
Okay, so why do we end things with our plug-ins?
You first, CJ.
My book is Blood and Bane, The Dragon Sage Chronicles. It's available on Amazon.com, both print and Kindle, as well as Smashwords. And you can find out more information about my book, as well as me, on www.mountaindragonmedia.com. And if you want to find out any information about the show or about both of us, you can also go to our website. Our website is ofdragonsandstarships.wordpress.com. And we also post all of our shows there, as well as on Podbean.
And I write science fiction novels. My website is, I'm Angus Day. I write science fiction novels in the Next U universe. My website is nextuuniverse.com. Share the U. You can get all of my books and links to my audiobooks, which are free, up on the Legacy of Daddy podcast from that site. My books are published on Amazon and on Smashwords. I do a blog that reviews books and other things called angus48.wordpress.com. Yep, I like to geek out with CJ every other week, and we create this. So I do want to put a PSA out there, and that if you read or watch or listen to something, please review it.
I agree. We should, anytime that we, especially if we like it and we want others people to know that we like it, not to say we don't take the good with the bad. You know, everybody's sometimes just not happy, so that's fine. Please, please, please leave a review. Contact us if you have any questions, if you like the show, if there's something specific you want to hear on our show, then please contact us. You can reach us at mountaindragonmedia@gmail.com. And yes, please let us know if you enjoy the show. Leave a comment. Like I said, feel free to ask us questions if there's something in particular you want to hear. We always, always, always like to hear feedback, especially as writers. Okay, that's it. Well, thank you all for enjoying the show and listening in. And if you're listening this on your way to work, I hope you were able to stay awake during your trip. And that's the important part. So thank you all. We'll see you next time.